I want to cover my text for today is going to be Isaiah 42, verse 21. We don't usually start off that way, but I will start that way today. Now, before I read verse 21, I want to say that all of the end of Isaiah from chapter 40 to the end, you'll see a lot about Jesus Christ, about the Messiah, and he is called a servant. And this chapter is about Jesus Christ. And verse 1, I will read, "Behold my servant whom I uphold, my elect one in whom my soul delights. I have put my spirit upon him. He will bring forth justice to the Gentiles." And then there are more prophecy about Jesus Christ. "He will not cry out nor raise his voice." Now that's talking about his first coming. When he came, when he did not cry out or raise his voice. And then verse 3, "A bruised reed he will not break, and smoking flax he will not quench." That's not talking about his second coming. That is definitely his first coming. But now notice verse 21. This is a verse that we quote fairly often. It says, "The Lord was well pleased for his righteousness' sake. He will exalt the law and make it honorable." Now that was the King James. The King James Version has, "He will magnify the law and make it honorable." Now that's an interesting statement. He's going to exalt the law. He is going to magnify the law and make it honorable. I want to mention that this word translated exalt, translated magnify, is the Hebrew word gadol. And I looked it up to see what a lexicon would say about it. It says there to grow, to become great or important, promote, make powerful, praise, magnify, do great things. Now that's what it had in the lexicon that I looked up. So all of those things about the law, the Messiah would do. The Bible in Basic English has translated this verse, "Let there be no thought that I have come to," that Jesus said. Let me get to that one later when I get to it. The Knox has brought this out, "To bring them to perfection." Jesus magnified and exalted the law by explaining its spiritual meaning. That's one of the ways. Now, a couple of ways he exalted and magnified the law. Maybe we could think of several. One way was to explain the meaning of the law in its spiritual meaning. Not just the letter of the law, but the spiritual meaning. The way of the heart. Another way he magnified the law is by writing it in our hearts. That the law was not just something you do, but it is something that is inside us. Now that magnified the law also. And I want to read back in Deuteronomy 30, verses 4 through 6. Deuteronomy 30. Verses 4 through 6. Even in the Old Testament, even back at the time of Moses, through whom God gave the law as the letter of the law that Jesus would magnify, Moses told of him magnifying it by putting it in us. It says in Deuteronomy 29, starting in verse 4, "Yet the Lord has not given you a heart to perceive, and eyes to see, and ears to hear to this very day." Oh, I went to wrong chapter. Excuse me. That was chapter 29, verse 4. Let me get to verse chapter 30. Well, that fit anyway. Inspiration every time. Boy, do I need it. Verse 4, chapter 30, verse 4. "If any of you are driven out to the farthest parts under heaven," which is going to happen, "and from there," it says, "from there the Lord your God will gather you." That's the second calling out of Israel, out of captivity. "And from there he will bring you." This is yet to come. "Then the Lord your God will bring you to the land which your fathers possessed." Israel possessed it. They were thrown out. "And will be. And you shall possess it. He will prosper you and multiply you more than your fathers. And," notice verse 6, "the Lord your God will circumcise your heart and the heart of your descendants to love the Lord your God." Now that's the first command, isn't it? But it's going to be in their hearts. "With all your heart and with all your soul, that you may live." And notice that change. That did not happen under Moses. But now he's saying it's going to happen. Notice Jeremiah 31, verse 31 through 34. Jeremiah 31, verse 31. And we'll read verse 31 through 34. Here's another promise. You know, the sermon I am giving today is not new for you here. You know this. This is talking about a new covenant. And you know about the new covenant. But this is a refresher of Jesus magnifying the law and making it honorable. Verse 31. "Behold, the days are coming, says the Lord God, when I will make a new covenant with the house of Israel and with the house of Judah." Now both, the house of Israel and house of Judah. Let me just tell you, I grew up not knowing that there were two separate houses, house of Israel, house of Judah. Never mentioned. I went to different churches, never brought up. But he's going to make a new covenant with the house of Israel, with the house of Judah. "Not according to the covenant that I made with their fathers in the day that I took them by the hand to lead them out of the land of Egypt. My covenant which they broke, though I was a husband to them, says the Lord. But this is the covenant that I will make with the house of Israel after those days, says the Lord. I will put my law in their minds." Now that's the difference. It's not doing away with the law. He's going to magnify the law, make it honorable. But you know, just telling people not to lust, just telling people not to hate, doesn't change a person. You can explain it. You can read the Sermon on the Mount, but it doesn't put it in your heart just by knowing it. The only way to have that is to have Jesus Christ through the Spirit come and live within us. And that's how he will put it. He says, "I will put my law in their minds and write it on their hearts. And I will be their God and they shall be my people. No more shall every man teach his neighbor and every man his brother, saying, 'Know the Lord.'" Now there will be teaching, But there won't be saying, know the Lord. Because the whole earth will eventually know the Lord when Jesus Christ returns and establishes God's kingdom on this earth. Know the Lord, for they all shall know me. From the least of them to the greatest of them, says the Lord. For I will forgive their iniquity and their sin I will remember no more. That is really magnifying the law when he writes it in their hearts and in their minds. Ezekiel 36, verse 24 through 27. Ezekiel 36. Verse, starting in verse 24. Here's the same promise of taking them out of captivity, a captivity yet to come. For I will take you from among the nations, gather you out of all countries, and bring you into your own land. Then I will sprinkle clean water on you, symbolic, and you shall be clean. I will cleanse you from all your filthiness and from all your idols. I will give you, and here's the promise. Now this is magnifying the law. I will give you a new heart and put a new spirit within you. I will take the heart of stone out of your flesh and give you a heart of flesh. I will put my spirit within you and cause you to walk in my statutes. Now, what statutes would they have known about? What statutes did Ezekiel know about? What statutes did Israel know when God was promising this as a future date? He says, you're going to go into captivity, but I'm going to bring you out of captivity, and then I'm going to put my spirit within you and cause you to walk in my statutes. And you will keep my judgments. Hasn't done away with statutes and judgments. And do them. Now that's a wonderful promise right there. Let's go to the book of Hebrews, chapter 8. Hebrews chapter 8, verse 7 through 10. And here we find these very verses that I have just read are going to be quoted. This same promise is mentioned in the New Testament. This promise has been fulfilled for those who have turned to God and God has called, but he hasn't called everybody. He hasn't called all of Israel yet. Hebrews chapter 8, verse 7 through 10, start in verse 7. For if that first covenant had been faultless, what was wrong with the first covenant? I had a young man, I guess in his 20s, who's down here in Nashville, and he hasn't started attending yet, but he's been very interested, and he said, why did God not let everybody know the truth? Why is he allowing Satan to be loose? Why? And I'm explaining, because God is letting us all taste Satan's way and see that it doesn't work. And then we have to fight against Satan's way, Satan's world, human nature, and build character. And God is letting us learn so we don't go the same way as Satan when God makes us immortal. He's giving us a chance to taste the bad way and then turn and fight it and learn the good way, God's way. So the first covenant had a fault. There was something left out of the first covenant. Everything God gave was perfect. Everything God gives is good. But there was something left out. It was His Spirit was left out of mankind. If the first covenant had been faultless, then no place would have been sought for a second. Because finding fault with them, not with His law, not with His statutes, not with His judgment, no problem there. God doesn't give bad things. All things that are good come from Him. Finding fault with them, He says, behold, the days are coming, says the Lord, when I will make a new covenant with the house of Israel and with the house of Judah. Not according to the covenant that I made with their fathers in the day when I took them by the hand to lead them out of the land of Egypt. Because they did not continue in my covenant, and I disregarded them, says the Lord. For this is the covenant that I will make with the house of Israel after those days, says the Lord. I will put my laws in their mind and write them on their hearts. And I will be their God, and they shall be my people. None of them shall teach his neighbor and none his brother, saying, know the Lord. For all shall know me from the least of them to the greatest of them. For I will be merciful to their unrighteousness, and their sins and their lawless deeds I will remember no more. Here we see this, well, I actually read past where I was intending to read, but that's fine. Hebrews 10, verse 16 and 17, he repeats some of that again. Hebrews 10, 16 and 17, he says much the same thing we just read. This is the covenant that I will make with them after those days, says the Lord. I will put my laws into their hearts, and in their minds I will write them. Then he adds, their sins and their lawless deeds I will remember no more. There is fulfilling and magnifying and honoring and exalting the law. I want to go to Matthew 5. I'm not going to read all of it, but the Sermon on the Mount, as well as any place, shows Jesus Christ magnifying the law. But just telling us these things isn't enough. Telling us that it has to be of the heart isn't enough. We have to have His strength within us, have it written in our minds and our hearts. I want to start in verse 17. Matthew 5, verse 17. Do not think that I came to destroy the law or the prophets. I did not come to destroy, but to fulfill. Now, sometimes a clever way of getting around the law, which is not a smart thing, it's clever, but it's not wise, maybe I should say, is to say, well, he didn't come to destroy the law, but he fulfilled it for us. It's done. It's filled. We don't have to do anything. He fulfilled it. We don't have to, therefore, fulfill it. His righteousness is imputed to us. Therefore, whatever we do, His righteousness is on us. Doesn't matter what we do. Now, I don't think anybody in here believes that that's what this means. He says, I did not come to destroy. And then they say, by fulfilling it, He destroyed it. No, He did not destroy the law or the prophets. The word fulfill here can mean to fill to the full. And I want to read that. The word is pleroo. And I want to read what it says here in a lexicon. Here's some of the meanings. They had a long list. I'm not going to read everything. To make full. Talks about a ship filling with water. And it uses the same word. To make full, to fill up, i.e., that's Latin, it est, that is, to fill to the full. Here's another meaning they give. To cause to abound, to furnish or supply liberally, to render full, i.e., to complete, to fill to the top, so that nothing shall be wanting to full measure, fill to the brim. It can mean to keep something, to fulfill it by keeping, but it also has these meanings of filling up to the full. Knox has translated this, to bring them to perfection, or to bring the law to perfection. The Bible in basic English says, let there be no thought that I have come to put an end to the law or the prophets. I have not come for destruction, but to make complete. To make the law complete. That is the spirit of the law. To fill it up, to exalt it, to magnify it. I want to read a little more going on in this. Just skim through here. And show him doing it. Verse 18. And we'll read down to verse 22. For assuredly I say to you, till heaven and earth pass away, one jot or one tittle will by no means pass from the law. There was a little tiny, one little tiny Hebrew letter. It's just a little like that. And then a tittle, on writing the Hebrew letters, they would often put a little swirl. You know, like we do sometimes in cursive, there's a little swirl at the bottom, little tittle. Will by no means pass from the law till all is fulfilled. Whoever, therefore, breaks one of the least of these commandments and teaches men so, shall be called least in the kingdom of heaven. But whoever does and teaches them, he shall be called great in the kingdom of heaven. Now, I've heard this explained, by the way, two different ways. I've heard it said it doesn't say they'll be in the kingdom. It just says they'll be called least. That is, in the kingdom of heaven, everybody say, well, those guys were the bottom of the rung who taught against the law. Just so happens I got a transcript of a Bible study that Dr. Hay gave in Pasadena, obviously many, many years ago, about the time error was creeping in. And he talked about the feast days. It was already into the feast season. Tabernacles wasn't there. I think it was between between trumpets and atonement. And he did not teach that this way. He did not teach this verse that way. He looked on it as people who were keeping the Sabbath, but weren't really understanding, keeping, and teaching the holy days. And they would be in the kingdom, but they would not be very high. And I have that transcript at home. So when I read that, I was actually a little surprised. But it's interesting, his feeling on this particular verse. So I just bring that out for your interest. For I say to you that unless your righteousness exceeds the righteousness of the scribes and Pharisees, you will by no means enter the kingdom of heaven. How does it have to exceed it? They were keeping the Sabbath very, very strictly. They were keeping the holy days very, very strictly. They avoided anything unclean. How can you exceed? There was no law that they knew of against hating your brother. There was no law against lusting as long as it wasn't a married woman. Because she didn't belong to. You weren't coveting somebody else's wife. So he magnified the law. They had the law. But the law was just something they had to do to please God. It wasn't in their hearts and minds. It wasn't based on love. And Jesus Christ came to show that God's spirit of love is the basis of the law. And the only way you and I can keep it in that way is to have God's spirit writing it on our hearts, writing it in our minds. That's where the righteousness exceeds. He goes on to say, you have heard that it was said to those of old, you shall not murder, and whoever murders will be in danger of the judgment. But I say to you that whoever is angry with his brother without cause shall be in danger of the judgment. And whoever says to his brother, Raca, shall be in danger of the council. But whoever says, you fool, shall be in danger of, and it's Gehenna, here is the Greek, Gehenna fire. So there we see a magnifying of the law. You don't just refrain from murder. You don't get angry unrighteously. There is righteous indignation. Separate sermon. Verse 27 and 28. Verse 27 and 28. You have heard that it was said to those of old, you shall not commit adultery. But I say to you that whoever looks at a woman to lust for her has already committed adultery with her in his heart. So there you have a, is that doing away with the law? Is it doing away with the law of adultery? Absolutely not. It's magnifying the law. Don't even look on a woman to lust. Now, how can that be done? Young men would say, might say that's the most difficult law of all to keep. But you know, with Jesus Christ, who never lusted, he was tempted in all points. But he controlled his mind through God's Spirit. And Jesus Christ in us can do the same. If you go to verse 43 through 48. Even keeping the Sabbath. One minister was counseling with a young man. I don't know who the young man was. Years ago he told me. That this young man says, well, I've grew up in the church and I've never broken the Sabbath. And the minister said to him, that may be true, but have you ever really kept it? Because part of keeping it, it shows love toward God. Have you really had the Sabbath in your heart, or have you just refrained from doing things that you shouldn't do? But what about in your heart? Interesting question. Verse 43, you have heard that it was said, you shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy. By the way, hate your enemy is not in the Bible. It's not in the Old Testament. That was just a statement among the Jews. You are to love your neighbor, but it was okay to hate your enemy. Even God does not hate his enemies. He loves them, but he's angered by what they do. But I say to you, love your enemies. Bless those who curse you. Do good to those who hate you. And pray for those who spitefully use you and persecute you. That you may be sons of your Father in heaven. For he makes his sun rise on the evil. He loves the evil. He may punish them because he loves them. He makes his sun rise on the evil and on the good and sends rain on the just and on the unjust. For if you love those who love you, what reward have you? And do not even the tax collectors do the same? And if you greet your brethren only, what do you do more than others? Do not even the tax collectors do so? Therefore you shall be perfect, just as your Father in heaven is perfect. Or the word can be mature, spiritually mature. How can we do that? By letting Jesus Christ magnify his law in our hearts and minds. That's magnifying the law. It's certainly not doing away with it.